productivity is about, at least the way I see it, is about doing what you need to do, but doing it better, doing it easier, doing it faster.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. As a keynote speaker, author, entrepreneur, and magician, Fred Moore is a productivity expert. He learned how to set goals, manage time, stay motivated, and maintain a positive mindset from his entertainment background. He uses humor and personal stories to inspire people to become the best versions of themselves. Hello, Fred Moore. I'm so happy to have Fred. You know what? So you are a magician. Is that right? A magician
that is,
and speaker.
That is correct. That is correct. More speaker nowadays than magician. That's how I got started, was doing magic, getting on stage and trying to fool people.
Yeah. Okay, well, I want to hear about that too.
Oh, okay. And, yeah.
I'm happy to talk to you because you make, I guess your specialty is making, you make working from home more efficient and you just want to be productive, right?
Exactly. Especially this last year and a half or so that a lot of people are working from home and a lot of people are going to continue to work from home because companies figured out, well, hey, this works, so let's do it.
Yeah. So let's talk about how you, first I kind of want to know how you got into magic, because it seems, did it start with magic and then the speaking, or were you like a more of a speaker first than magician? Which one?
No, definitely magic first. I was always the kid that got the magic kits at Christmas, always get out the books from the library. And when I was 16, that's when I decided that this is what I wanted to do for a living. I told my high school guidance counselor when he asked me, what do you want to do for a living? Which is a silly question to ask a 16-year-old kid because, you know, right. Well, I don't know. 10 years ago, I wanted to be a fireman, an astronaut, and a dog. So so I looked at him. I said, I want to be a magician. And he looked at me and went, good luck with that. I'm probably the only person that ever said that to him. Probably the only person that will. So, you know, So I just kind of went on from there, decided I took magic lessons from a magician that lived in my town and kind of just went on from there, kind of learned the business, as it were. There's not too many books out there or videos back in there. Back in the olden days, we didn't have videos.
Right. That's a good
about one. how to be successful in show business. So,
And you started performing. Like, when did you start doing live shows?
Not too long after. I was 16 when I did my first real paid gig. I got $75, and that was, you know, back in 1980. So $75 to a 16-year-old is like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I went on, probably it was age 19, I got my first gig at a theme park where I was doing multiple shows, multiple days, like 5 shows a day, 6 days a week for 4 months. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really got to polish my act. Any entertainer will tell you that you need to be bad before you can be good, just like any skill that you want to learn. If you want to be learn to be a writer, well, you got to start writing, and you're probably going to be bad at it. Mm-hmm. And you need to do it over and over and over. It's the old, Simon Sinek, I think. Malcolm Gladwell, 10,000 hours.
Yes.
So that's where I got my 10,000 hours, because I did 500 shows in 4 months. And I got to find out what didn't work and what did work. And with this kind of stuff that I did, and any performer, especially a stand-up comedian or a magician, you don't know if this stuff is going to work until you put it out there. Until you see what kind of reaction you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, you publish your short story and see if anyone likes it. You put your content out on a blog and see if anyone responds to it. Yeah. And then, you know, we all know this now, of course, you post something on social media, and if you get a bunch of likes on it, you look at that post and figure out, all right, well, what works in that post? What was it that people liked? And I need to do more of that.
Mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I have to tell you that when my brother was in high school, he, first of all, and of the two of us, I was the reader. I still am the reader. Like, I loved reading books. I could just be happy sitting in a corner reading books. And he was very social and like outgoing and always had to be around people. Mm-hmm. So to see him reading anything was highly unusual, unless it was an instruction manual to a game that he really wanted to learn to play. So I remember one day coming home and there was this stack of magic books that he checked out from the library, like sitting on his bed, and my jaw dropped. I said, "What? You're reading books?" And he was so into magic. And I mean, he was already the popular guy on campus. He was even more popular because he started doing all these magic tricks for his friends. And I always remember that because it taught me that if people really want to learn something, they will invest the time to learn it. And this is pre-YouTube, so it wasn't like you were saying. It wasn't like he could just go and watch videos on how to do it. But then when I became a high school teacher, there's always, every year, without fail, there's at least that one kid that's like doing magic tricks right before class starts for his classmates or right after class. So I think it's really, it's not uncommon to see students, especially high school students, kind of become interested in magic. And
oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's kind of unusual that you said your brother was popular, because usually it's the shy kid, is the kids that not that popular, that gets into magic. I always joke that, you know, I wasn't smart enough for the chess club and I wasn't an athlete to go on the football team, so card tricks it was, you know. I needed to find something to set me apart in high school. And here's something that I could do that nobody else could.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then, you become a magician, you start learning the craft, right? Practicing and doing shows. How then did that lead to motivational speaking?
Well, I started doing this for a living, doing just magic, doing comedy magic, work corporate events, cruise ships, still do to this day. This last year, not so many cruise ships, but for obvious reasons. Yeah. But that led into the corporate market as far as speaking, because it's like I'd see speakers that had really good information, but they were not natural speakers. They couldn't engage an audience. They couldn't, you know, make them laugh. There's an old joke in the NSA, not that NSA, not the listeners, the talkers, the National Speakers Association.
Okay.
Where they say, if you're a speaker, if you're a professional speaker, do you have to be funny? And the joke is only if you want to make a living in it. Because if you're up there just spewing out information, it's very boring and very, you know, it's good information, but people aren't taking it in. So as an entertainer, I already knew how to capture people's attention, how to keep their attention, how to get them to buy into what I was doing, because, you know, I'm a magician. My job is to come up there and fool you, and nobody really likes to be fooled, so I had to do it in a way that they enjoyed it, as opposed to, here's a trick, you don't know how it's done, you're stupid. There's some magicians, they start out that way, because they need that, you know, like I said, when the kid's shy in school, he needs that superior feeling, because he doesn't get that. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, professional speaker, I need to get them to like me. I need to get them to trust me. And then once I do that, the information that I give them is, you know, accepted and processed a lot easier. Their mind is relaxed. They're more open to it. And at this point, they trust me. So the speaking was just, you know, it's like, all right, well, what do I need to go from here? And I got to be honest with you. If I'm a speaker, I get paid more than if I'm a magician. That was not the big factor, but that was just a bonus in the whole thing.
Do you enjoy, you're a motivation. I mean, do you call yourself a motivational speaker? Because that's what it sounds like.
Kind of, sort of. Inspirational, motivational, entertaining speaker. I kind of hate I don't hate, but dislike the term motivational speaker, because that conjures up, you can do it. Think thoughts, rainbows and unicorns and everything's great.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Without actually giving you any tools to use after the conference is over, because you get all hyped up and you're motivated, and then you go back to the office and it's the same old, same old. It's like, all right, what do I need to do now? Or you go back home and you're like, okay, well, it's the same old, you know, mm-hmm. I remember what he said, but I don't know how to do that. So,
mm-hmm. so you knew that you wanted to encourage and inspire people, as that being the content of what you were speaking on.
Not so much the content. That was the tough part for me, was what can I teach people?
Yeah.
I mean, what's my expertise? You go see a lot of keynote speakers and they have, you know, years in business. They've been CEOs in companies and they've climbed Mount Everest twice, you know, in the winter, uphill both ways. And And so it's like, well, you know, I do guard tricks. What can I teach people? Mm-hmm. Well, what I'd learned when I was doing this full time and I didn't have a quote real job is I learned that the business part of show business is twice as important as the actual show. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger word, twice as many letters as show. Yeah. Coincidence? Yeah, pretty much. But so I had to learn the business side. And in the early years, before I was making a steady living at this, I did have to have a quote real job. And so I had to learn how to use my time. Mm-hmm. Right? I had a limited amount of time to work on the business and work on the craft, as it were. So I had to figure out how to use my time better. And that's when I started discovering productivity and goal setting and how to specifically set certain tasks so that they will be accomplished by a certain timeline, and just how to get things done more efficiently and faster and easier.
Mm. So you figured out what you were good at.
Yes.
I think that's really interesting, because I think a lot of people who, even writers, who are looking for this content to write on, just like, I don't know what to write. I don't know, especially nonfiction. I don't know what I can teach people. But if you really examine what it is that you're good, and you might have to ask your friends and family, people who know you, because it might be something you're not even fully aware of, right? I mean, the thought that you you are good at time management, is that something you had to, did that idea just come to you like, oh yeah, I can manage my time? Or is that something you had to kind of discover and really think about, like, what am I?
Yeah, I had to discover it, because it's like, well, what am I good at? You know, mm-hmm. I'm good at getting on the stage and making people laugh and entertaining them, but that's not going to translate to the business world as much. Yeah. There are soft skills that people need to learn. Yeah. But, and so when I sat down and thought about it and looked at it, like, well, what can I teach people? And it's like, well, I'm pretty efficient with my time, and I know how to motivate myself and set goals so they will be, you know, obtained and get what I want. And so I thought, all right, well, that's what I need to start teaching people then.
That's really encouraging to hear your story on how you discovered that, because I think it gives a lot of people hope. Like, just, there is something, you just got to discover it, but there is something.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like when I first got into magic, I looked at other magicians and I thought, well, I'm going to do what they do. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause that's, well, you emulate the people that you admire. I want to be that guy. So I started dressing like them and talking like them and doing the tricks that they did. Mm-hmm. And I realized, well, there's already one of them already.
Right.
I need to do me. I need to be myself. Mm-hmm. And in the same with writing or speaking, I needed to convey something that I knew. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to write about something, it's going to be about something that I know. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to go out and start doing a whole bunch of research and learn something, you know, read books and then regurgitate what I've read. That doesn't do anybody any good.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I totally hear that. That makes sense. So Fred, I know you have a story about being fired that kind of, Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It was interesting. I was back performing, and at that point I was doing probably, you know, 60% performing, well, more like 80% performing and 20% speaking. Mm-hmm. So I was doing a contract. I worked for a big corporation and we're doing a touring show. This show toured the United States, toured Europe, South America, been going on for a while. big corporation. I don't want to mention the corporation's name. Ha-ha, how you doing, boys and girls? Yeah. I live in Florida. Did I mention that? Orlando, I live. All right. So 2 years I was working for this company. We did Europe. We did South America. We're about to start the U.S. tour. And as far as I knew, everything was going fine. I get called in to a production meeting, and the head of HR walks in. And whenever the head of HR is in a meeting with you,
yeah,
it's not good. Yeah. I swear, as soon as he walked in, I heard, dun, 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 you know. Yeah. And we kind of chit-chat a little bit, and he says, well, you know what? We've decided we're going to release you from your contract, which is a nice way of saying, you're fired. Mm. And the way the contract was written is they could release me, I could get out of the contract. It was kind of a, you know, it was a contract. And for me as an entertainer, doing this show was great because my main job is finding work, finding people that have a problem I can solve, whether it's they need an entertaining speaker after lunch or they need a keynote speaker or they need just entertainment for an awards, but whatever. Yeah. And so my job is finding those people. And when I worked at this touring show, I didn't have to look for work. I had a 9-month contract. I had a 6-month contract. And this contract coming up was a 9-month contract. I'm like, awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't have to look for work for 9 months. I can relax and enjoy myself. Well, we were 2 weeks into this 9-month contract when they released me from my contract. So, you know, I want to tell you that I shook his hand. I said, thank you for the opportunity. This is great. There's other opportunities. I'm going and going out forward and being successful. Friend. I want to tell you that.
Yeah.
But that's a lie. That's a lie.
Why did they release you?
Well, I come to find out that everybody else in the cast, there was two magicians in the show, uh-huh, along with the other characters, and there was dancers and whatnot. And everybody else was 25 years old. I, at the time, was in my 40s. Mm-hmm. I was the old guy on stage for some reason. I was the dad. Hey, look, somebody's dad is on stage. Mm-hmm. And the character I was playing was an amateur magician. I don't know why they hired me for the part in the first place, but I'm not going to say no. Mm-hmm. It worked for 2 years, evidently, and then somebody decided, wait a minute, this is no. So they rewrote the show and kind of recast my role. Instead of a magician, it was somebody who did a magic trick. And so they hired an actor to do the part. Mm. So they saved a little money. They didn't tell me, of course, that, you know, you're too old. That was basically it. Mm-hmm. But so I did what most people do. I commiserated and I gave myself 24 hours. All right, I'm going to be miserable about this for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Because being miserable about it isn't going to do me any good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could sit there and, why did this happen to me? They're horrible people. I'll show them, you know. Mm. So I gave myself 24 hours just to commiserate. We're in New York City at the time. And so I just took a walk for the day. I walked around New York City, enjoyed it. And then the next day, flew home and decided, all right, what's next? And that's when I discovered a very important thing about that whole process. I discovered I was replaceable in that role, right? They got somebody else to do exactly what I was doing. I was replaceable. So if I wanted to be successful at what I was doing as a keynote speaker, which was where my focus was at the time, I needed to be irreplaceable. I needed to be, there's only one. If you want what I'm selling, you got to get me. Nobody else is doing it like I'm doing it. Nobody else is teaching it like I'm doing it. Nobody else is writing the books. Hey, look at that. Like I am. So if you want me, you got to get Fred Moore. It's not like, let's get a magician. Let's get somebody this height, this size, this age. Nope. If you want Fred Moore, you got to get Fred Moore.
Mm-hmm. Is that like building a brand, basically?
Yeah, to some extent.
Yeah. You build what people remember about you after you've left, like what made you you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Something unique, whether it's, you know, your look or your perspective or your style.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great lesson to be irreplaceable.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about caring, because I know you also believe that no one cares more about you than you, and why is that important?
Well, it's that old thing with selling. I was talking with a potential client the other day, and he kind of flat out said, he goes, "Oh, I checked out your website, and you know we're interested." He goes, "It seems kind of like your own agent," because he'd gone through speakers bureaus before to hire a keynote entertainer. Mm-hmm. And I says, "Well," I said, "I mean, I work with agents and I work with other people, but when it comes to talking with the client, I talk with the client because nobody can sell me like me, right? Right? Yeah. Nobody has a vested interest in me like me." Right. Now, maybe my mom, but still, you know, I think mostly, you know how it is. So, yeah, I mean, you got to be comfortable with yourself. You got to be comfortable with selling yourself. You got to be comfortable with rejection. Mm-hmm. Because that, you know, in this, you know, in show business, in writing, it happens all the time. Mm. I mean, it happens more often than not.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You have to be comfortable in your own shoes and your own self. And when the negative stuff happens, when the rejections happen, you got to be able to go, okay, right. Next.
Yeah. Okay. So these are great lessons. So let's say that we're working from home and we are irreplaceable in whatever we're doing, whether we're working for ourselves or for someone else. And we have learned the value of actually caring deeply about what we do and who we are, and understanding that no one cares more about us than we do. Like, no one cares more about me than me. So how then can I use my time at this work from home job productively so that I can be the best irreplaceable person I can be, and at the same time not overworking myself like a dog?
Exactly. That's the thing. People think productivity, first of all, everyone's super busy right now.
Yeah.
And so the concept of being more productive is like, I don't have time to do what I'm trying to do right now. And now you're telling me you want me to do more?
Right.
Productivity is about, at least the way I see it, is about doing what you need to do, but doing it better, doing it easier, doing it faster. Because I got to tell you, I'm a lazy person. I mean, you wouldn't think of it. You see me in my office when it's during work hours, mm-hmm. and it's like, he doesn't look lazy because he's just boom, 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 boom. He's going. Well, that's because I've given myself a finite amount of time to do this. Every Sunday, I'll sit down in my office, get my dry erase board. I've got, let's see, 6 dry erase boards. I have a problem. I have an addiction, evidently. It's dry erase aroma.
I hope you can't get high off that.
I'm on a 2-step program. I'm more efficient. I'm more productive that way. Not a 12-step. But I'll write down like, all right, what needs to be done this week? What tasks do I need to do? And then I'll look at like, all right, what's already on the calendar, and then where can I slot those tasks in? And I'll schedule my week out, and my work schedule is my work schedule. That's when I'm working. Now, working for myself, I have the advantage of like, all right, well, I can, you know, I can go to the kids' dance recital. I can, you know, we can go out and play in the park today because I can kind of make my own schedule at times. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But it's very important that I'll have specific tasks I schedule every workday at the same time. And I'll do one task. I'll give you an example. I prospect. I have 2 hours of prospecting, 2 blocks of time that is set aside for prospecting every workday. Mm-hmm. And that's finding people that I can help, finding people that have a problem I can solve.
Yeah.
That's all I'm doing, is that one thing, mm-hmm. right? They say focus is an acronym for follow one course until success.
Mm.
So I'm doing one thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm setting a timer on my computer, on my phone, for 45 or 50 minutes. And I start that timer, and all I'm doing is that one thing. That's it. Nothing else. I'm not answering my email. I'm not answering my phone. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm not doing anything. I'm not watching funny cat videos on YouTube. I'm doing one thing. Mm-hmm. And then when that timer goes off, I get up and I take a break. I stretch, I walk around, I take a bio break, I get something to drink, I pet the cat, play with the kids, kiss my wife, whatever. Mm-hmm. I take a break, and then I go back to it. Now, I may do those prospecting time blocks together, one after the other, or I might spread them out depending on what's going on. But I'll make sure I get those two things done because those are the most important things. Those are my money-making activities.
Mm.
Now, I'll also have time blocks set aside for writing. If I'm writing my blog, if I'm working on my next book, I'll set aside a time to do just that. Mm-hmm. That one thing and nothing else. Now, in that 45 or 50 minutes, I'll get so much more done. I'll get a lot more prospects into my customer relationship management software, my CRM, than I would if I spent 3 or 4 hours the day going, let me find somebody, you know.
Yeah.
Because usually I'm looking for somebody, I'm researching them, I'm contacting them, I'm calling them. No, all I'm doing in this 45, 50 minutes is finding them and putting their information into my database.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, there's another block of time I'll set aside to contact them, to send out emails, to follow up, to phone, you know, get them on the phone, whatever. But I'm doing just this one thing and one thing alone. And by doing that, it gives me focus time. It also gives me the opportunity to know that I've gotten stuff done that day. Tell me if this has happened to you. I know it's happened to me. It's happened to most people. Is you're like, all right, I'm going to do this today. And 3 or 4 hours later, you're still doing that. And you felt like you haven't gotten anything done.
Yeah.
Right. Well, with those time blocks, now it's like, all right, I have a start point. I have an end point, which means I'm stopping doing this. I may not be done with it. If I'm working on a website, I'm working on copy, I'm working on my book, whatever, I may not be done with it, but I'm stopping.
Mm.
And I know I've gotten something accomplished. I've been productive. Because at the end of the day, I'll look back and I'll take one of those dry erase boards and I'll write down, what did I do today? Right? I prospected for an hour. I worked on my book for an hour. I did this. I went out to the park. I took the kids for ice cream. I did this. I did this. And then I'll take a picture with it, my phone, put it in a file that's marked what I did this year. And so now I can look back on that throughout the year and go, all right, these are productive days. Maybe these days, not so much. But I have a record of it and I have it's measurable because I can see like, all right, I did this. I got it done. And that way I don't have that feeling at the end of the day or the end of the week, like, oh, I didn't do anything this week.
Right. Yeah. I think that's great. Yeah, because I think like we set goals, or at least I've done this where I set a goal and then I feel like I have to do as much as possible, like in a day or like every day. Like I have to work hours and hours and hours and hours just to get closer to this goal. Like I want to reach the goal as soon as possible, basically. So I'm trying to do everything I can every day. And then I get exhausted and frustrated when I do that. But I like your system of just blocking it out. Like, okay, 2 hours to 2 hours a day. And it doesn't mean I need to reach the goal at the end of 2 hours. It just means I've been productive and I'm taking these steps, these 2 hour steps per day to reach that bigger goal.
Exactly. And what really helps too is, because especially if it's a long-term goal, you know, like finishing your novel or book or whatever, if it's not something that's you're going to be able to complete today, it's hard because it's a big goal.
Right.
And so you're not feeling like you've accomplished anything, even though you've taken a chunk out of that goal, you haven't completed it.
Yeah.
So that part of your brain is going, but we didn't do anything. So what I'll tend to do is I'll set tasks every day where I actually do something. Now, for me, it's I'll build something or I'll fix something. I have a workshop. I'm actually, I have a little model that I'm working on of a time machine from the 1965 movie by George Powell. And it's just a little craft thing I bought. But I'll take about 30 minutes at the end of my day and just work on that. Mm-hmm. So I'm creating something. Mm-hmm. I'm getting something done.
Yeah.
And so that part of my brain that's, you know, like, oh, we need to do something, because you don't get that immediate instant gratification of, all right, I'm going to write a book. 20 minutes later, I'm done.
You know. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And you know what else happens is that when I basically try to just spend many, many hours a day to reach whatever goal I'm trying to reach, I end up taking time away from other things that really matter, like calling my friends and family, or just taking some time to relax or meditate. And that's part of the exhaustion, because I'm not really feeding into the things that bring me peace and joy.
Exactly. That's why when I was talking about those 45 or 50 minutes I set aside,
yeah,
I also put on a timer for that 15-minute break.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have that scheduled on my calendar, that this time I'm doing this, and then I'm taking a break. Mm-hmm. And that break time is not like, all right, well, I'll go check my email during that break time. It's like, no, I'm stepping away from the office. I'm getting up, stretching. Like you said, I'm relaxing. Maybe I'll send somebody a message or call somebody real quick. But it's that you're giving your brain a break, mm-hmm, and it needs it, because we're not wired to work 24/7. You know, we need some sort of break.
Yeah. So after the 2 hours of prospecting, how much time do you spend doing the work? I mean, not like prospecting isn't the work, but like, so, yeah. If you're helping people, or like, what is, so you're finding clients during the prospecting, right? How many hours per day are you actually working with clients? How do you do that?
It depends. It varies. Because mostly what I'm doing now is keynote presentations at conferences.
Okay.
So there'll be the weeks leading up to the conference, there'll be a lot of intensive work in the keynote, because I tend to try to customize it as much as I can to their needs, their problems, and their obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be, you know, several hours. Now, during those weeks, if I've got several keynotes lined up, I may not be doing as much prospecting as I normally would, which is kind of a double-edged sword, because I'm doing the prospecting so I can work. But if I'm not doing the prospecting, I won't get the work. But if I'm doing the work from the prospecting, I can't prospect. Ha!
Yeah.
So that's why they're, you know, blocking off that time is really important to me. During those times, it's like, all right, I'm going to set aside time to, you know, work on the keynote speech and interview people for it and things like that. So I'll still use that same idea of blocking out time for those specific tasks.
Are you working 7 days a week, or do you have like a limit on how many days?
No, typically I work 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Monday through Friday kind of guy. Saturday, it's family day, you know, same thing with Sunday. Sunday we get up, we go to church, and then we come home and just relax and do nothing. Now, you know, there are exceptions to that rule as well. Sometimes if I'm doing a gig, I'm doing a gig, you know?
Right. Yeah. But so it sounds like in the, time management, it's like the most important thing is to prioritize, like what's the most important, of course, that makes sense. Like, what's the most important task I need to accomplish? And of course it's going to be finding clients. So that's what you're really focusing in on every day.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing, you know, it's the most important task, but it's not my most favorite task.
Right.
You know,
okay.
It's not the thing that's like, oh, I can't wait to go on the computer and Google people. Yay. It's not one of those things. And that's why I schedule it. And I kind of make myself stick to it, because it's like, it's not like it's horrible. It's just, you know, it's not creative. It's not, you know, it's not fun. It's like, yay, this is so much fun. It's, you know, there's a process to it. And that's why I tend to do it the first thing. You know, you get the most important task out of the way first, but also the one that's the least enjoyable. Get that out of the way. And then you can do the fun stuff.
You know, Fred, I've seen, and I've never read one of these books. Maybe you have, and you can maybe talk a little about the books about, like, they're titled things like The 4-Hour Workday, or
right,
How to Work how do you say, easier but smarter? Or I don't know. Like, what have you ever read any of those books? And what is that? What is the 4-hour week?
A 4-hour work week is a lot geared towards, and actually, who's ahead of his time, about working from home before everyone was doing it. Uh-huh. And a lot of that is outsourcing the tasks. And so you focus on the really important tasks. Mm-hmm. Now, prospecting is a really important task, and I've outsourced some of that to some mm-hmm. extent. But for the most part, I tend to do that because I know what I'm specifically looking for. And especially if I'm contacting clients, that's all me. I'm not going to outsource that. But yeah, a lot of those books have to do with outsourcing and getting other people, paying other people to do the stuff that you don't want to do so you can focus on the fun stuff or the stuff that's going to make you the most money.
Okay. Well, but you have to have money to outsource, right?
it's a double-edged sword.
Okay. So, okay, Fred, mm-hmm. we're working from home. We have set aside, we've prioritized our tasks and we've set aside time. And what happens after, let's say I've spent 3 weeks working on a particular goal for my job. Like I needed to do XXX in 3 weeks. And by 3 weeks, I still haven't accomplished it. Do I need to reassess how much time I'm spending? Or what do I do when I'm not even getting
well, there anymore? If you got a task and you have a 3-week deadline.
Yeah.
At, you know, day 19 is not the time to go, ooh, I'm not going to get this done. Typically what I'll do is on Friday, you know, my work week starts Monday, ends on Friday. Friday is my evaluation day. I'm mm-hmm. going to look at the tasks that I've been doing and I'm going to see if they're effective or not. Am I getting the most bang for my buck? The outreach process that I'm doing, am I getting response from it? The social media post I'm doing, am I getting engagement from it?
Okay.
And so that way I'm not going to go on for 3 weeks. And like you said, in your case, you're not going to go on for 3 weeks doing what you're doing and then go, oh, well, this isn't working. Take some time to evaluate the steps you're taking, if they're effective or not. And if they're not, change them. If they are, keep doing more of what you're doing.
Okay. So you evaluate once a week?
Yeah. Typically that's what I do.
Okay. Yeah. That's actually a very good idea. And then that way, you're not like 2 weeks in or 3 weeks in and it's not going anywhere. You catch it early.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Or drink a lot of coffee the night before and Red Bull and just, you know.
I don't know about that.
Exactly.
That would actually make you more like stressful and, you know.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit more stressful. Yeah. Okay, so we're kind of closing in on our time, but I want to know if you have any more tips for us.
Well, I mean, there's lots of stuff. I'd say check out my videos. There's lots of productivity tips on there, which we'll get to that. But I'd say just, you know, schedule your week, schedule in breaks so that you're not overwhelmed. You're not going to be so tired at the end of the workday that you don't feel like doing anything the next day. And take some time every day if you can. It's really hard, I know. And I've been trying to do this more and more. Take some time, 15, 20, 30 minutes, and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. When I worked on cruise ships, I would do this. I would take every night, I'd go out, I'd grab a cup of coffee, I'd sit on the deck, stare at the ocean for like 30 minutes. My phone wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm not watching videos. I'm not listening to anything. I'm listening to my mind. Mm-hmm. It's going off. Now I have a notebook there because I'll think of things like, oh, this is a good idea. And I'll write it down, but I won't work on it. I'll just write it down and then just go back to nothing. It gives my brain a chance to relax. It gives my subconscious mind a chance to kind of like go, oh, hey, what's going on? You know, we're not in reactive mode. We're not dealing with things. We're not actively going for something. It's just for a few moments.
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
That's a great tip. It's very important to just take that time to breathe, right? Or even play or whatever.
Exactly.
It is. Yeah.
Exactly.
Where do you find time to do marketing stuff?
I schedule it.
Okay.
That's,
yeah. How do you schedule that? Because it seems like you were mentioning earlier social media, we can get so sucked into that and,
oh, yeah.
And you know, hours on Twitter or Instagram or whatever.
Right. And again, I'll set a specific time. I'll set a timer. All right. I'm going to spend 30 minutes going on LinkedIn and looking in groups and commenting and post, you know, or liking or whatever. And I'll set up, I schedule my posts ahead of time. So I'm not on there every day because we all get sucked into the social media. I'm just going to check one thing and then like, oh, I'm off on never land somewhere.
Yeah.
So schedule it. That's the magic secret. Schedule everything.
You use one of those like scheduling programs?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's simple and you can just simply, you know, put it in your calendar, put it in your Google calendar or whatever. And just, you know, set specific times. And then set a timer. So the timer goes off and you got to be disciplined to shut it off and get up and stop what you're doing.
And do you set aside time to, how do you say, what we call it professional development at work, but maybe it is even for yourself, professional development where you're just kind of learning?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll try to set it like 20 minutes again at the end of my work day after I've worked on my model or before it sometimes to read. And when the kids were in school, I'd go and pick up the kids and I'd go wait in the car rider line and I had about 20 minutes there. So it was perfect opportunity to whip out a book and just, you know, wait for them, wait for school to come out and get them. So, you know, you can find little bits of time and use them wisely. So.
Yeah. That's great. I love it. Oh, I do have one last question. Do you have like a cutoff time where you don't do anything related to work?
Usually if it's a fun day, like Monday, we're planning on going out to one of the parks here. And that's a day where it's like, I'm not going to do any work. You know, it's a Monday. So it's like, all right, not going to do any work at all. You know? I mean, I'll check my emails throughout the day, but not, you know, who doesn't do that, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's hard not to do.
It is.
But
it
you know is. What? For work, I don't check my email. Like after when I leave campus, I'm done.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Smart. Very smart. I knew that's why I was talking to you. Smart lady you are.
Yeah. Fred, this has been wonderful. This is... been a very educational conversation. Learn how to be productive. I love it. Tell us where we can find you, Fred.
Yeah. Do so much more is my website, dosomuchmore.com. And if you want to get some productivity tips sent to you, and I have a PDF that will tell you how to get an average of 5 hours back every week. And yeah, I know. And 5hoursback.com, the number 5. Hoursback.com. I should have a graphic to go up for that, but I don't. Yeah, go there. Give me the obligatory name and email address. You don't even have to give me your real email. Just, you know, get a fake one
email.
So that, you know, get what you need and then just, you know, ignore it. Because I will send you some more productivity tips. I'm not going to spam you. I'm not going to, you know. But yeah, so go there and you'll be able to get the PDF. There's some videos on there. There's some worksheets on how to make your day and your week and your life more productive. So.
Oh, wonderful. I love it. Thank you so much, Fred.
Fred's sense of humor makes him so much fun to talk to. And I learned a lot from that conversation. The one of the lessons that stands out in my mind is the importance of using a timer. And I've been using a timer for years to get tasks done. But this conversation just kind of highlighted how valuable that can be when you have a specific thing that you need to work on. You set the timer and you put all your focus on that specific thing for that particular amount of time. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to complete that thing, but at least you know you put all your focus on that thing for 5, 10, 20 minutes, an hour, whatever. And you got something done, right? So that was pretty valuable. And then another really valuable lesson was the bit about being irreplaceable, whether you're working for yourself or you're working for someone else. It's just
if you're irreplaceable, you're adding so much value to other people's lives, the people that you are serving when you're irreplaceable. So that was a huge lesson. So I hope that you also learned something from Fred, and that you will check out his website and contact him if you want to work with him or find out more information about him. And in the meantime, also check out zazo.com and sign up for my newsletter. And you can follow me on social media. I'm at Twitter at Ebony Haywood, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week when I talk to another fabulous person. Bye-bye.